Summary of chapter 3, Naimittika Dharma is to be relinquished.
One night, just after 10 o'clock, Sannyasi Thakur was deep in meditation, chanting Hari Nam. All of a sudden, he walked from his Bhajakutir into the silky night and slowly climbed to the top of the hill at the edge of the Godruma woods. He peered towards the north. At the zenith, the full moon waved a magic wand, and the surrounding landscape and nearby Navadvip glowed beautifully in silvery glory. Suddenly, a divine manifestation of nearby Sri Mayapur became visible before his eyes. He saw large temples and archways, all constructed with precious gems. The sound of the congregational chanting of Hari Nam resounded everywhere. Thousands of devotees were playing upon veenas and swirling around in stately dance. He saw the chiefs of the demigods, Shri Mahadev and Indra, dancing and singing in ecstatic kirtan. He saw Lord Brahma, who was glorifying Lord Chaitanya in the midst of an assembly of rishis. So the absorbed, right, in the name. So that means the accompaniments to the name, the mridangas, the kartals, here, veenas, all these things, then one is so expert at them that one can play them without even focusing on them. Right? In other words, you can play the beats. That's why the Indian system is learnt the way it is that it's learnt by just practice and practice and practice exactly the same things until it's such a habit, because you never have to think about it. So just as the mood changes or the beat changes, you automatically change the mridanga, the kartal. And is the singing, just whatever you're singing, you can play it on the veena. Right? Here, veena would mean, in this case, Rudra veena, because that you can put on your shoulder, like what Narad Muni uses. Right? And that way you can walk, you can dance, you can do anything with it. So that means they have to be so expert in the musical accompaniment, right? Mm. The Gandharvas, the Vididharas, Charnas, they're absorbed in these things because they're musicians, right? So they're absorbed in what they're doing, what they're going to do, how much to do here, there, trying to create something that's very nice, has the variety, doesn't repeat things. So you're very focused on your technique. Right? Does that make sense? But in here, they're not focusing on the technique. They're focusing on the Hari Nam. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Sannyasi Thakur. Yes. He saw Lord Brahma, who was glorifying Lord Chaitanya in the midst of an assembly of rishis. Sannyasi Thakur thought, "This is wonderful. I have seen Sri Mayapur in broad daylight many times, but I have never beheld anything like that before. What am I seeing?" Remembering his Gurudev, Sannyasi Thakur said, "O Master, today I realize that you have blessed me to perceive the transcendental realm of Mayapur. From today onwards, I will strive to present myself as a devotee of Sri Chaitanya. Seeing that everyone in the spiritual land of Navadvip is decorated with tulsi neck beads, tilak, and the letters of Sri Nam stamped on his body, I will also do the same." So that's the natural is called Vaishnav Chinna. Means that which marks one as Vaishnav, right? So the neck beads, the tilak, putting the names of the Lord on the body, these kind of elements, then these are items that one sees, this is a devotee. Next morning, Sannyasi Thakur, hastened to the river and sent his Mayavadi Sannyasi staff afloat downstream, putting three stands of Tulsi neck beads around his neck and applying the vertical Urdhva Pundra, Vaishnav Tilak mark upon his forehead. He began to sing, Hari, Hari. After that, he prostrated himself before Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji, who had come to the woody retreat of Sri Madhavamalati Mandap to chant Harinam. Seeing the wonderful transformation in Sannyasi Thakur, both in attire and sentiment, Premdas Babaji Maharaj stood up and embraced his disciple, showering him with a cascade of tears, and said, O my dear Vaishnav Das, I feel great spiritual exhilaration by the touch of your blessed body. He also changed his cloth. Does it mention it? Because I know someplace you get the idea that he... Huh?
Yes.
He did. Okay. Yeah, because he mentioned here, he also mentioned the attire. So it was more than the beads. He just took on the Paramahamsa dress. Okay. With that statement, Sannyasi Thakur's previous name was forsaken. He received a new life from that day and was known as Vaishnava Das. Thus, he abandoned his Mayavad sannyas dress, okay, here it says, his prestigious sannyas name, and the exalted conception he had of himself.
Famous in your own mind.
Famous in your own mind, yeah. Yeah, there was one, I can't remember the region, but it was a joke in that locale, about a different locale, where the people were very, very proud of themselves and their abilities. And one person was talking to another, hey, I came up with a great business plan. He says, what's that? He says, I'll buy one of those guys from the next village for what he actually is worth, and I'll sell him for what he thinks he's worth. So I made great profit. Like that. Yeah, so like that. The Mayavadis, they concept, very great concept of exalted conception of herself. Later in the afternoon, Vaishnavas from Navadvip Dham and Sri Godrum assembled in the bowers of Prajumna Kunj, tourists from Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji. They were bowshantly seated all around about him, softly chanting Harinam upon their Tulsi beads, their eyes on their Tulsi beads, their eyes brimming with tears. They called out, O my Sri Gauranga, Prabhu Nityananda, O my Lord Sitana. They discussed amongst themselves topics about the confidential service of their Ishta Dev, and then, after circumambulating Tulsi Devi, their They offered obeisances. At that time, Vaishnav Das also circumambulated Tulsi Devi, then fell to the ground, rolling in the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. But it's also dust off the, off, it means it could be the dust that came off the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. Yeah. Right?
That's true.
Still rolling on the ground, Vaishnav Das began to petition the assembly. Today, I am extremely grateful to have received the dust from the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. By the mercy of my Gurudev, I have come to know in full that for the jiva, the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas is the only means to attain perfection. Right? Means he has understood his position, he's been able to see, you know, appreciate the Dham position, all by the grace of his position, all by the grace of Guru. Right? So, the point is the process is chanting the name, but we're able to actually take it to the devotee, that process by the grace of the devotees. Right? So that's the main point to learn, is that there's no such thing as it's just me and the name, and by that I'll get everything done. Right? But even if you think it's just myself and the name will bring you to the platform of purity that you will then eventually appreciate Vaishnavas and therefore be able to make dynamic advancement. So in any case, the holy name is so perfect, in any way you approach, it will work out. But the point of, we learned from the beginning that it's about the Vaishnavas, and that in the assembly of Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas are always absorbed in Krishna, so they're chanting. What's the name of Mayapur? It means the place of the Lord's potency. It means Yoga Maya. So the place of Yoga Maya means where the Lord's Yoga Maya potency is there. Right? So outside of this, that's Maha Mayapur. So this is Yoga Mayapur. Yeah? I was born into a Brahmana family, studied all the different scriptures, and finally entered the renounced order of life. My false ego knew no bounds. Nevertheless, since the time I was first attracted to the Vaishnava philosophy, the seed of humility has been implanted in my heart. Right? So in other words, seeing the Vaishnavas, it's the mood of the Vaishnavas that is taken on. Because it's the mood that actually sets and establishes the transcendental position. Right? So therefore, that's what he appreciated. He may not have understood that at the time. He just knew that there was something there that was special. Right? Because he was transcendentally situated. But he had reached the limit of what you can get. Because Brahmananda has a limit. Because it's unlimited. But not the effect is not dynamic. So that means whatever is the taste of Brahmananda, it's always the taste of Brahmananda, because if it's increasing, why would it increase? Unless there is a dynamic interaction to create increase. Does that make sense? So it's always the same. Does that make sense? Right, yeah. It means electricity is there, it's always the same. But if you put it through a transformer, then you can get it to go up.
Is a Vaishnav more feminine than a Mayavadi?
It's just the mood, and it takes on the mood, and there's no mood for them. So usually we...
What do you mean by feminine? He's like, are they cross-dressers?
No, I was thinking that, more...
Is the ladies wear, I mean, when they wear the sari, there's no pleats in the back, so the sannyasis, they wear the no pleats in the back, so is that more feminine? Is that kind of a thing? Or?
No, that was not exactly what I was thinking.
Okay, so then what do you mean by
the focus
more
on the
feminine?
Mood. Yeah.
Focus on the mood.
Yeah, where it seems like the Mayavadis, they are very logically driven.
So you're saying, so, but the thing is the question, the Mayavadis are naturally masculine based, so then are the Vaishnavas naturally feminine based?
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But then what's the natural position of energy?
Feminine.
Okay, so then it's just taking on the natural nature of themselves, but as soul. But to be in the masculine position, not as just a social role, but as the concept that you are the creator, the maintainer, all these kind of things. That would be unnatural masculine position. So all it is Vaishnavas are in the natural position as servant of the Lord, while the Mayavadis are in the unnatural position of being very confident that they're God. You know what I'm saying? The others kind of say they are and would like to be, you know, but they're very confident. You know, like Arani Kashyap, he just feels he is, right? The Mayavadi has verses and shlokas to back it up why he is. So, you understand? So it's false.
Yeah.
But, you know, in other words, you would use certain terminologies and that for certain situations. You wouldn't take them into the other, because then it takes on a different mood. Because otherwise, then you can bring out sahaja aspect and this and that. So that's why there is different words. Because word. Situation changes, you change the word. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the... Now, gradually by your grace, means the Vaishnavas, I have discarded the arrogance born of high lineage, the prestige of material education, and the pride that so often accompanies the exalted position of sannyas. I have concluded that my life is meaningless without finding the sanctuary of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. I submit all this to you in full simplicity. So now you are free to deal with me, your servant, in any way you deem fit, right? So here's the balance, right? Because otherwise you could say, you know, or one sometimes sees that a devotee, sometimes emotions come up and, you know, they become, you know, very absorbed in them. And so they may say something to the assembly of the devotees and this and that. But at the end of it, then when they say, you can, I am your servant, so you can deal with me as you deem fit. Mm. But here, it's actually meant. Because if it's a matter of all these things are said and all that, but you're doing that to make yourself the center of the assembly of Vaishnavas, it's not that you actually want to do service, you just want them to go, oh yes, so nice, aren't you so nice, or so advanced, no, no, no. And they'll take the humble position, so of course they won't tell you what to do. Do you understand? Some nice, that's nice, it has some nice sentiment, but the problem is you're still maintaining false ego. Right? It may be smaller, it may be in a correct direction, but it's still not on a pure platform.
I am so humble.
Yes, I am so humble. I'm more humble than you. Yeah. No, I'm more humble. No, I'm more humble.
And then the switch is, no, you're more humble. No, you're more humble.
Yeah. Like that. You can keep going until they call for breakfast. Yes.
Maharaj, in regards to the sannyasi naturally bringing the fire, why would Vaishnava take a connection with yesterday when you mentioned that the ashram is depending on the need, what would be a need to take
sannyas? Attachment to renunciation. Renunciation is what I'm saying. But renunciation is in a better position than attachment. Material attachment is lower than material renunciation. You understand? Because material renunciation is required to get out of the universe. Does that make sense? But spiritual attachment is required to get into the spiritual world. So it is a higher position. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, the arrogance that might be there from knowledge, but still knowledge is in a superior position than administration. And the arrogance that may be there from administration is still superior to the arrogance that's there from money. And money is still superior to skills. Right? And skills are superior to not having it. You understand? Does that make sense? So even amongst the labor class, someone who has finer skills, like someone who is a technical aspect of office work will feel he's better than the person who's a non-technical in the office. And they'll fit the office man doing better than the person who's doing physical labor. But the person who supervises or knows more technique is better than the person who knows less or is not supervising. And the person who just is told what to do because he doesn't really have any skills, he's at the bottom. You understand? So even within that, there's still that hierarchy. And then even you get down to the bottom, let's say like he's a street sweeper, still we're sweeping, you know, Beverly Hills. So we're better than the guys that are over there in, you know, in Santa Monica, right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. It just goes on like that. And then within Beverly, there'll be a particular street, and then we're sweeping in front of this guy's house, you know, so we're better than you. You don't have it. You're not sweeping in front of a celebrity's house, you know. You know, like that. So it'll just go, it's just, whatever it is, they'll find a way to be proud. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is it's giving up all, so we don't just target that one, because the point is that Grihastha is also arrogant. The brahmacharya can be. I mean, it says it tends to, right? The priest, and the pride that often, so often accompanies the exalted position of sannyasa. It doesn't say it will, right? But he says the arrogance born of high lineage, the prestige of material activity, these are basically inherent. But here it can. It doesn't necessarily have to be, because you see the Avantipur Brahman, he didn't have that arrogance, right? So that's why he's used it as an example. Right? So we shouldn't think, oh, therefore we shouldn't respect the sannyasis because then it'll make them proud. You hear devotees say this, as if it's their position to, you know, train and discipline the sannyasis. You know what I'm saying? like that, you know. So it's, you know, it's not. One sticks to one's own duty and the mentality that goes with your duty, and the mentality that goes to someone else, that's their business. It's not your business. You know, it's like that. Because they don't do it everywhere. They don't do it with authority. They don't do it with juniors. Right, the junior is supposed to be humble, so then I should be humble to set the example, and so therefore I let the kid do whatever he likes. They don't do that. You know, they're the parent, they're the kid. Right? It's just the way it is. That, you know, the parent has his mentality, the kid has his. Right? You know what I'm saying? So, but when they reverse it the other way, then they put themselves in the senior position controlling those who are above them. You know what I'm saying? So it's cheating. It's just arrogance that, yes. But you make it sound nice. You know, you put it in nice words. Is that okay? Many of the Vaishnavas, after hearing Vaishnava Dasa's earnest confessions, addressed him, saying, "O saintly soul," right? So his confession means it wasn't good. He wasn't trying to point out to everybody, "Oh, well, actually, from I'm a, you know, high-grade Brahmin family, and I know a lot of you guys here aren't," and all that, because Vaishnavas are very broad. But hey, I was from, and we were really well-knowledged. That I know you guys aren't so well-read. You know, okay, Prem Das Babaji, he's, you know, quite well-known. But the rest of you, I mean, you know, like that. You know, you got to admit like that, you know. And I was sannyasi, travel all over and do all these different things. And hey, you probably just came from something and just moved you to Navadvipa. So it wasn't that. It was confessions. That actually it was a fault that he had. So they addressed him saying, "O saintly soul, you are the object of Babaji Maharaj's mercy. Thus, sanctify us by your association. We were able to attain your holy association only on account of the piety we have accumulated in our past lives, such as fostered devotion. And now, on the strength of your association, we are hopeful of achieving pure devotion to the Supreme Lord." Once these mutual exchanges between the sincere and humble Vaishnavas were concluded, Vaishnav Das took a seat to one side of the seated assembly, enhancing its dignity. Right? So these things are there, but they have a place, because that's between them. But then they've come there to hear from Prem Das Babaji. Right? So it's not that they'll go on with this forever and trying to squeeze more and more taste out of it. No, it's just the natural flow of it. You don't overly do it. It doesn't work. Does that make sense? You know, the kid comes, you know, running around, you know, sits there next to you, sits in your lap, so, you know, you're with them and like this. But then it's nice, you know. The kid likes, you like, and that, but then you want it to continue, so you try to keep the kid there. But the kid wants to get up and run around again. So if you try to keep him there, then the kid gets upset. If the kid runs off, he'll be back later. You understand? So there's the natural flow. Does that make sense? So it's naturally there's that interaction. The mood came up. It's not now this becomes a ritual. Every time they come there, then someone rolls in the dust and says, "Oh, this, that." They're, "Oh, no, no," like that. You don't do that. I mean, there are communities, you know, so-called Gaudiyas who do this. And that's why at the time of the writing of this literature, then the actual class didn't appreciate Gaudiyas. Yeah. So therefore, he's showing the actual proper system and the proper mentality. Once these mutual exchanges between the sincere... Okay. On that very day, another fortunate soul, a gentleman from Shantipur, was seated in the gathering of Vaishnavas. He belonged to a high Brahmin lineage and had inherited vast properties of land. He had become an expert in the art of diplomacy and politics. Position many years had been exploiting his position of power for his own advantage and had enjoyed many benefits, but happiness still eluded him. As a last resort, he began to chant Hari Nam, right? So, okay, nothing else worked. We'll give it a try. You know? So now, remember, this chapter's Naimittika Dharma is to be relinquished, right? So now we see one of the advantages, because one may ask, well, why does the Vedas, if all these things, the Varnashram, these other things, aren't actually what we're supposed to be doing, why are they recommended? Okay? Now, here, what is the result? He is following Shastra, right? Diplomacy, politics, in other words, he's following Niti Shastra, and probably Artha Shastra, Artha and Niti. Mm. He's very expert at it. And by using it, because it is the God-given laws, he is getting the actual material benefits. You use the Shastra conjunctions properly in the situation for economic development and sense gratification, you will get economic development and sense gratification. Right? But because it's from the Shastras, well, how does that establish him? Right? According to the other, how you say, writing of the Thakur. Theistic moralist. I think that's, yeah. Does that make sense? So he is working on the platform of morality, right? Because morality means, right? Right? So your artha, your niti, that's morality, that's ethics. But he's going from shastra. So he's following his sadhana as a Brahmin, he's doing all these things, but he's using it just for economic development. And he's applying that into sense gratification. But he's using Shastra, so whatever is the best you can get, he has. Right? He's Brahmin, he's following the culture, he's respected as a Brahmin from that, he's gotten lots of land, inherited, gotten in so many ways because of his position. He's used his position and his knowledge in that to further gain more, to enjoy more, everything. So now, the point is there anything else you could do to get more? This is the point that's important. If you've followed the Shastras, done everything within your duties, and you've gotten all the benefits from that, is there something more you can do that will get you more material facility? No, that's the point. So now, why can he comfortably see that nothing else is there except the holy name? Right? Because he's done everything else. But if you're not a theistic moralist, or you're not a moralist at all, right? Then what's going to be the problem? You're going to speculate that there are more ways that you could get money and enjoy. So what is the more ways? Sinful. And it seemingly gets you something, but it very quickly gets you something, very quickly also you lose. Mm-hmm. And generally what you lose is greater. Mm-hmm. Just like if I perform, you know, one yajna and that elevates me to the, you know, for thousands of years to the heavenly planets. I didn't put in thousands of years of work. Mm-hmm. Right? I didn't put in the amount of money that I'll have in the heavenly planets. Mm-hmm. You understand? I didn't put... Does that make sense? The physical effort. So, in other words, there's profit. Right? That's the idea of profit. I can put in a little work and get more back. Right? I take 1 kilo of grains, put it into the field in the proper way, and I get back hundreds of kilos of grains. Does that make sense? Like, you know, a handful of seeds and I plant vegetables, I get back a huge pile. That's profit. That means if I do it properly, then you put in that little bit of work, you get so much more back. It's a good deal, right? But if you're not following that, what does that mean? You get the opposite. You know what I'm saying? We will complain is, I only did this, why am I getting so much of a reaction? But the point is you don't complain when you only did this and you got a lot of benefit. You understand? So that's the point. Sinful may appear to give something, but the reaction to it is so great, right? Like we saw before, is that for 100 lifetimes, right, the person will have no shelter, right? If he doesn't properly adjudicate things and give shelter to those who come. So one case you've dealt improperly, but 100 lifetimes you won't have any shelter. So that's how it works. But if you adjudicate nicely, you can imagine that one adjudication, that will give him so much benefit in the heavenly planets. And so if he spends a lifetime of running his court properly, how much benefit will he have? You understand? So that's the idea of the naimittic activities, is that you're convinced that there is nothing more. Because sinful is not an option. Right? Those who are uneducated, you know, in the actual transcendental understanding like that, or even in the pious understanding, then they don't see this. They just see it as another opportunity. So niti simply applied on its own without even the understanding of artha and dharma. And so then the problem comes, they don't know their reactions. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So therefore, it appears to be an optional. Modern society has so many options that shouldn't be used. Mm-hmm. And they're not really, it's not like the modern society is doing great as far as economics go. You know, you have your fancy gizmos, gadgets, there's still people living in fancy places. There's, you know, some nice clothes, some this and that, some nice looking buildings. But in general, what is the economics?
Yes.
Not good, right? A couple of places it's coming up, but it's been like this for a long time now. They're talking about the recession for what? Almost 10 years now, right? You know, but like that. The last time I was there was what? Back in the 20s when there was the depression, no, 30s, the depression. Like that. That went for 10 years. You know what I'm saying? So things have dropped more than it did then. But because they didn't know how to manage it, therefore it fell apart more. So they're actually in the same situation, just a little better at managing it. They have more experience. Does that make sense? So it's not good, but they're using these techniques, but they're not working. So the idea is that one has used the techniques. That's why the Vedas give. You're a brahmachari, you live like this, then you'll get your benefit, right? You're a grihastha, you live like this, you get the benefit. Vanaprastha, sannyas, you live like, you get the benefits. Then you can see, there, you've gotten the limit of the benefits, it still doesn't make you happy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as happy as people say, but it's not as happy as you'd like to be. You know? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? In other words, yes, you're in a comfortable position. But it's not that that comfortable position generates that ongoing, continuing, increasing happiness. Right, because that's not the nature of the soul. The soul has to be able to get that from the spiritual platform. Therefore, Hari Nam. Does that make sense? Yes.
In the previous conversation, we were talking about the same principle applies to the grihastha life.
Right.
And he does everything to make his grihastha life good. So when you come to that conclusion.
Yes, that's the idea. It means, in other words, the more you have that need, the more you should deal with it nicely and try to fulfill it. Right? Because trying to fulfill it, you'll see that it actually can't be fulfilled. Right? You know, that's the idea. It's just like you just have that. You just have that need to hit yourself in the head with a hammer because you know you just have this. It's got to be good, right? You know, others haven't tried it. There must be something there. You know, like that. You know. So therefore, if I give you a hammer and you hit yourself, then you'll go, "That wasn't so good." You understand? If I just tell you, no, it's not good and this and that, you'll always have that idea that, well, you know, maybe if I try, maybe he doesn't know. So that's why the Vedas have this, but it's in a regulated way, right? I mean, so in other words, if you hit yourself too hard, then, you know, you may not have enough, capacity to actually be able to appreciate that it wasn't good. Right, you know, so you can only hit yourself, but the problem is why I can only hit myself that hard? Why can't I just really go for it? Because you don't know. So that's why the scriptures say, only deal with it like this, because if you do more than that, it'll create problem later. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that, you know. So therefore, everything is regulated so that it's the amount that it will actually give an experience that you would consider technically getting favorable. But then from getting that favorable experience, you'll see it actually is not that great. So that's what one's trying to be convinced, that I do everything right in the material world, the results I get isn't that great. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the way. That's how Maya tricks. You know, the first time you do something, it's oh so nice. You spend the rest of your life trying to get that moment back. You won't find it. That's the trick. Okay. So as a last resort, he had begun to chant Hari Nam. As a young boy, he had good musical training. And he considered that is, that this qualifies him to occasionally lead the kirtan session of the Vaishnavas, right? Because he's a musician, that's why he's qualified. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're a manager, that's why you're qualified. You should be the temple president. The other, no. But the point is that it's not connected to Krishna and devotion. That's where the qualification. It's not that by being purified, he wouldn't be a good kirtan leader. But just because you have the material skill, that doesn't make you a kirtan leader. But the truth was that while singing, he was just attempting to parade his musical ability. So it's not devotion. It's just he's good at music, yes. However, quite suddenly, a few days earlier, he had unexpectedly started to feel increasing pleasure in singing Hari Nam. Thus, he had taken up residence in the house of a Vaishnava, of Sri Godruma, to enable himself to participate more conveniently in kirtan with the Vaishnavas of Sri Navadvipa Dham. So at the time, Shantipur was famous for the Brahminical culture, but Navadvipa was famous for the Vaishnavas. He attentively listened to the words of Vaishnav Das, during which certain doubts had welled up in his mind. Being a skilled orator, right, because he knew music, he knew scriptures, he knew how to discuss debate, he audaciously addressed the assembly, inquiring as follows. The Dharma Shastras have described the Brahmanas as the highest class of men in the social order, and their sandhya-bandhana duties as the nitya karma, right? Because now we're discussing naimittik, right? Now he's going to establish that the chanting of the Gayatri, that's the nitya karma. This be so, then why are the activities of the Vaishnavas opposed to these religious duties? Of course, he has the point is he's done all those duties and now he's chanting Hari Nam, so, you know, how did that work out for him? But the Vaishnavas aren't going to say that, right? You know, that's the advantage of sannyas. You can say that, right? You know, Vaishnavas would say it in such a much more pleasant, nice way. Right? Vaishnavas have no taste for mundane argument and debate. Had this question been raised by caste brahmanas, who are known to be argumentative, the Vaishnavas would, to avoid becoming embroiled in a battle of words, have declined to answer. Right? The caste brahmanas, they just like to argue. It's not that they want a conclusion. Right? Because in debate, you have what's called nigrahastan. Means that thing, by saying it, you defeat the other person. Means he doesn't have anything to say back. It doesn't mean, means you technically won the argument. It doesn't mean that you are right. You understand? That's the difficulty with debate as a medium. That's why it's not direct. Is that you could establish the truth, or you could just win. You understand? So generally speaking, many who get into debate, the point is winning. So if they're good at it, they become good at this nigrahastan. How to establish, how to crush the other's argument. Right, they find out how he's presenting, how he's logically going, what things he does know, and then craft a point to say that just crushes him. He doesn't have anything more to say. Right, but that's not what debate's for, because Krishna says of debate, he is Siddhanta, the conclusion. So if in the debate you come to the conclusion, that's worth a discussion. Right, so that's why then the general thing is if the if those who just like to debate raise a question, you don't even bother. Right? Yeah.
In debate, when we say Siddhanta or conclusion, does that mean both parties agree on this conclusion?
It's not necessarily both parties agree, but in other words, you may have defeated him, but you defeated him using conclusions and Siddhanta. Okay. If he accepts that, good. If he doesn't accept it, what can you do? Right, but you have established, you know, the proper conclusion. So generally speaking, you see the Vaishnavas wouldn't get involved in this. But if it's something that will affect the Sampradaya, which would come up occasionally, you know, at the time of Vishwanath and Baladev, then there was discussion that we're actually not a Sampradaya. So then you have to go discuss with the logicians and establish it. You know, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the caste Goswamis, saying that the Brahmins were higher than the Vaishnavas. Like that, and so the Vaishnavas should do what the Brahmins say, rather than they're in their own class. So then you have to go and establish it according to the logic. So it'll be used. Those who know it, they do it. That's why Vishwanath, he was the senior person, but Baladev was the one who was trained in this. So he went and did it. Or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went and established this. He was asked by the other Vaishnavas to do that. Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj says, you do that. Because he knows the conclusion. So Gaur Kishoredas Babaji Maharaj could easily present the absolute truth and defeat their arguments, but because it wouldn't be in the format that they expect, they would say he actually didn't do it properly. You know what I'm saying? In other words, he didn't use the mundane technique to establish the absolute truth. The absolute truth is not dependent on the mundane technique. But because their mentality is mundane, they can only relate to the mundane technique. You understand? So when it's necessary, the technique is used. Right? Because the devotees, it's just a discussion. They want to know the truth. Therefore, logic is used, but it's not as a debate. Right? Does that make sense?
Sometimes discussing discussing with people who have this tendency for Jnana,
right.
Face that same.
Yes, yes. I mean, so go on, and they're the ones that as soon as they see that you're about to close in on them, they change, they move the point. You know, but Prabhupada's technique is you don't move the point, you just keep speaking on this point. Mm-hmm. So they'll try to reintroduce this, but you don't, you just keep going further and further on here. And it makes them squirm. They really don't like it. Because their mental speculation, that enjoyment's over because they're being locked to one point. They don't like it at all. But that's the technique. You don't let them because they'll run all over and you have to chase them. Because you're chasing them, so it puts them in the better position. Because it's not that you're chasing them and so therefore they're trying to hide. It's they're moving wherever they like and you have to follow them. So therefore you don't do that. You just keep going to that same place where they're supposed to be, and then that defeats them. Yes?
This person who mentioned that Krishna was opposed to this religious.
No, they're talking about he's not. Oh, it means they're asking why are the Vaishnavas opposed to these religious duties, yes.
What duties are we opposed to?
No, he's saying here is the Nitya Karma. Is that the Sanyabandhan is the Nitya Karma. But for us, the Nitya Karma is chanting the holy name. You know what I'm saying? We chant Gayatri as a support to that, but they take the Gayatri Japa as the main Japa. The Brahmins, that is their Japa. So then the Sanyabandhana, you just sit down and, you know, basically the only rule is that, you know, you don't talk when you're chanting Gayatri and you try to concentrate on it and, you know, ideally you don't, you know, strangle your tongue, right? You know? Blood can still flow, right? No? Yeah. So, but Sanyabandhan is all, there's mantras and purifying yourself, calling the deity, all this. It takes about 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? If that was added to it, probably, you know, no one would be chanting Gayatri. You know what I'm saying? So the Vaishnavas don't worry about the Sanyabandhan. You know? Does that make sense? Like that. They just chant it as part of the support of the holy name. However, since they saw that the questioner regularly sang Hari Nam, everyone concluded that if Sri Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji were to answer the question, it would very much satisfy the assembly. Babaji Maharaj respectfully heard the unanimous decision of the Vaishnavas. He first offered prostrated obeisances to the assembly and then began to speak. Dear exalted Vaishnavas, if you have no objection, then let the stalwart Vaishnava Das tackle this question exhaustively. Everyone approved of the suggestion because he's also trained in logic. So, in other words, Premdas could answer it very succinctly and exactly. But the problem is because the person is used to hearing all this logic and everything, he may not catch it. But Premdas, because he is, you could probably say, way more qualified Shastriki and as far as debate goes than the person, but at the same time he has the proper Vaishnava attitude, so he'll deal with it appropriately. He won't go more into logic than he needs to, but at the same time to establish the fact with this person, then he will take the time. So that's why he says exhaustively. In other words, he'll deal with it from every angle. It'll be totally, obliterated, resolved. It means the person will have no more questions. Then he can just go on with his chanting very happily. Right?
cards, where it says that he first offered prostrated obeisances in the center. Would that mean he would have gotten down and dandavats or just?
Yeah, no, full dandavats. Is that there? It's not exactly the setup like the temple room. You know, it's just there. There's a kunj, there's a tulsi, there's some place, you know, where everybody can sit, and some place probably where, you know, Prem Das would probably generally sit. But you know, so it's just, you know, they would take the time. You know, they weren't in the Vanchas Prabhu line. Or the other day I heard one, bunches of bunches. you know, so yeah, they weren't exactly in that line. So they would spend time on this etiquette because they wouldn't waste time in the discussions. We don't spend time in the etiquette because we're busy wasting time in the other things like that. So, you know, it balances out. You know, it's just what you want, that's all. With sincere humility, Vaishnava Das deliberated aloud. I am an extremely fallen soul in a dire condition. Yet also I cannot contradict the command of my guru. Right, so in other words, I'm fallen, but my guru has asked me to do it, so I can't go against that. So therefore, I will. Whatever knowledge I have received by way of the nectarian instruction from the lotus lips of my guru, I shall sincerely strive to repeat from memory. Right? In other words, he's heard the Vaishnava philosophy, but by hearing it, now he understands how all the other knowledge he had is also connected within the Vaishnava. So that means he's learned those things from his guru. Right? In other words, you learn everything about a car, okay, but then the person who shows you, you take this little key, you turn it, you know, like that, and then you, like this, then that's the person who actually showed you how the car, you know, what to do with the car. Because that makes all the other knowledge complete. He then walked up to Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji and smeared the dust of his lotus feet all over his own body and head. Standing erect, he started his dissertation. Let the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the embodiment of divine bliss and the ultimate source of all partial and plenary expansions of the Absolute Lord, whose effulgence is Brahman and whose partial manifestation is Paramatma, the supersoul within all living entities, inspire us with superior intelligence. So in one sentence he said everything. Completed, you know, established what is, you know, sambandhigyan. Human nature is divided into two states. Vaidhi, regulated by the rules and regulations of Shastra, and Raganuga, spontaneous attraction to the Lord's service. So before, this discussion just established their presence and what they were. Mm-hmm. Now he's going to show its further application. As long as the consciousness is under the influence of Maya, the guidance of the Vaidhi practice remains as an important necessity. However, once the consciousness shakes off the shackles of Maya, it leaves the Vaidhi state and manifests its innate Raganuga state nature, which is the Jiva's original and pure constitution. This stage can be attained only by the grace of Sri Krishna. Right? In other words, by yourself, you can follow sadhana. It means, of course, it's by the grace of the Vaishnavas, but it's by your endeavor you can elevate yourself to the Madhyama platform. But to get to the Uttama platform, it's only by Krishna's grace. Like that crossing there, that's only by Krishna's grace. Does that make sense? So we can see it's by Krishna's grace that already the taste and that attachment is coming, right? Because we were reading before that taste and attachment, though they're within the Madhyam platform, within the conditioned platform, they're the preliminaries of bhava. Right? So they're actually connected to bhava. It's where bhava interfaces down with sadhana bhakti. Right? But it's on that middle stage. Right? Does that make sense? And bhava is the intermediate to prema. Right?
So it's because you're above the modes?
Which?
When you go from Madhyam to Uttama.
Yes, because then you're liberated. So only Krishna can liberate someone. The residents of the spiritual realm of Braja are by nature ragatmika. spontaneously flooded in devotion to Sri Krishna. The jivas in the intermediate state who strive progressively towards emancipation, right? Emancipation means liberation, take shelter of the ragatmika nature and thus become raganugas, right? Followers of the ragatmika devotees. Now it's also important to note here, okay, that the ragatmika position means is that general that everybody rag is their life. Raga atmika means the raga rag is their life. Rag anuga means anuga, you're following the footsteps of those with rag. Right? So the rag atmika means, you can say in general is here, all the residents of Vrindavan, because rag is their life. But at the same time is you have those that one is following. Does that make sense? So technically you can say Mother Jashoda, she's the rag atmika. Right? Within rag atmika, she's the rag anuga, and all others in the parental ras are rag anuga of her rag. Though because they're only filled with rag, they're also rag atmika. But they're rag anuga rag atmika, so she's rag atmika rag atmikas. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Right, and then ultimately you can say she is Raganuga of Radharani's. But because the rasas are different, therefore you're not following the detail, you're simply following the principle of attachment. So generally that's not brought out, because then it breaks down the position of the pastime, right? Because it removes all the different things and relationships that are there. But it's mentioned, Radharani, is Rupa Goswami says in Nectar Devotion, she's the only devotee. Everyone else is the devotee of her. Everyone else is her servant. Right? So in other words, she's the devotee. Then you have the main devotees who represents the different tastes that serve that devotion to Krishna. But they head that particular taste of serving Krishna. So then you have Sudama, Sri Dama, you have Madhu Mangal, you have, you know, Mother Jashoda and Kirtida, and then you have, you know, the main Sarabi cows, you know, Madhavendapuri, the Kalpa Vriksha tree. So all of the Kalpa Vriksha trees are following his mood. Does that make sense? Like that. So then like that. Does that make sense? Because some will just say, we're only Raganuga here and there. There is no Raganuga. You're still following their Rag.
Maharaj, there are one special devotee,
Means it depends on the mood, because in friendship you have equal, junior, superior, and confidential. Also, does that make sense? So you're going to have those who need that. But generally you see Sridham, Sudham, Madhu Mangal, these are the ones that you take as leaders. And Balaram, you know, for the senior. You know? So, because there's Balaram, and then there's a whole list of them. When they go out, with the Krishna and the cowherd boys, they take shields and swords and weapons. They actually take weaponry with them, because that's the only way Mother Jashoda will let them go, because they're older. So then they'll take care, they'll protect. So then, that's okay. So they're there, they stand guard, they see that everything goes nice. Yes? Right. No, it means you follow the footsteps of that mood of full surrender. Now, whether you are in that particular rasa or another, it doesn't matter, because the point of that full surrender and that service to Radharani, that will remain. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, there'll be that connection with the pastime centered around Radharani, as opposed to other gopis. Does that make sense? That's why it's a preferred position, because if you take the position of a gopi, not a maidservant, then you put yourself in the position to actually be an equal to Radharani. So in certain situations, you're a rival. So we don't want to put ourselves there. So that's why we'll take that position. But someone might be a cowherd boy or this or that, or you even see those who are servants of Lord Chaitanya. But at the same time, as they have their own deity, Murari Gupta. You know, he worships Lord Chaitanya and Lord Ramachandra. But if it's within Vrindavan, it's Lord Chaitanya Vrindavan. So it's just Radharani. So just to see that those pastimes go well. But it doesn't mean that you can't be part of it. Vamsi Das Babaji, he was in parental loss. You know. So that's why he would deal with his deities the way he was, because he was like the parent. So they do something wrong, he punished them. Like that. The bowls got stolen. Right? This thief came in and stole their bowls while you make the offerings. So then, you know, then the point is the sense of the supreme controllers, they allowed the thief to come. Right? So the thief stole their bowls, so that's their, you know, tricks and plays as kids. So you wanna play tricks, fine. No dinner. You know. When there's bowls there, you get dinner. No bowls, no dinner. Right? So just at that time then somebody walked in and very humbly came and gave a gift to you know, the Babaji Maharaj, and there was a bowl, you know, like that. So then he turned to them and says, okay, Nittai gets dinner, you know, but Garanga is still no bowl. So he's in a different, that's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recommended that none of his disciples go over there. They wouldn't understand what he's doing. And that's one of the ones you could more relate to. I think he used to take his deities down to like where the trains were, and go around and hide, and then show where you know the thieves were going around, so you could see the thief over there, the stealing from over there. You know, so you do all far out stuff. Okay. In the jivas in the intermediate state, who strive, so that means, in other words, in the conditioned state, you're always raga-nuga. Because you don't have that raga, the raga's not yours. Once you come to the platform of prema, even in the platform of bhava, technically, you're raga-anuga. Because prema is the actual raga, the actual attachment. Once you come to prema, then you could say, on one sense, technically you're ragatmika then, because you have that rag. But at the same time, as you're still in relationship to Krishna, raganuga to the ragatmikas, you know, in your line. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of the mentality. Position, you're ragatmika, but mentality, you're still raganuga. But in this case, position is raganuga. Yeah. There's no question that you could be ragatmika. No, it's just... This is coveted an excellent position for the jiva, because as long as the jiva lacks this position of raganuga, his consciousness remains spontaneous, engrossed in illusory material entanglement. In other words, you're following vaidhi because you're actually attached to the material energy. Right? When raganuga is there, you're spontaneously attracted to devotional service. Right? Now, think about this. When we're discussing raganuga, then generally speaking, when we talk about it, means we understand it's that spontaneous attraction to Krishna. But when it's being discussed as something to practice, what do we discuss?
Sadhana.
You understand? So again, it's back to the vaidhi. Because why? We're attracted to the external energy. The point is raganu means you're attracted to Krishna. So even though you're doing some sadhana, you have to do something. That's not what you're focused on. You know what I'm saying? The mother is cooking breakfast for the child. She's feeling great affection. Is she focusing on the cooking? She's doing the cooking nicely, but the mood is not in the cooking. But you have the five-star chef. Actually, no, you don't have five-star chefs. You have three-star chefs. You have five-star hotels. I found this out the other day. You only get three Michelin stars, I'd say. Sorry.
But restaurants get
five. Yeah. But somehow or another, because that's, I think, the arrangements they have. But the quality of cooking can only be up to the three-star level. So five-star means they have it in many areas.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. And these are guys that sell tires, right?
Yeah, exactly. French.
Right? The point is you have tires. What are you going
to
do with tires?
Drive.
You're
going to
drive. Yeah, so the point is why would you drive somewhere unless there's a good restaurant to go to? Right? So therefore, by pointing out what are good restaurants, you'll drive there. By driving there, your tires wear out. Then what happens? You buy more tires, right? Smart. right? Who'd put together tires and rest, you know, and food, right? But they are smart. Okay, so in other words, the jiva in the intermediate state who strive progressively towards emancipation take shelter of their ragatmika nature and thus become raganudas. We take shelter of that. In other words, the mood is that of devotion. So technically all devotees are raganuga because they're taking shelter of the idea to develop love for Krishna. But as an actual practice and consciousness, they may not be there. But because that's known, one will get there. If it's not a state that you're trying to get, how will you get that? Right? As a result of habitual contact with the material energy, the ignorant conditioned jiva interprets his material conditioning as his innate and original nature. That's why things are going rough and we're not the center and things are, you know, things are bothering us. Then what's the statement we're going to say? Everybody, it's working for everybody else, but it's not working for you. What's the statement? What about me?
Why me?
Yeah, why me? But it's not you. It's just the modes of nature connected. Your conditioned nature is getting going through a rough time, but it's not you. You know what I'm saying? Okay. In his relationships with matter, his consciousness is deeply afflicted by affection and hatred. This is known as samsara, material life. Most people caught in the wheel of samsara do not see this fallen misery as a serious problem and thus never consider attaining their real nature because it's just normal, because there is taste, so they don't mind it. I mean, you don't like it when it's not so good and then it's good, but at the same time, as even it's good, you want to change. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The point is the guys up north, where do they go for vacation?
South.
But the guys south, where do they go for vacation?
North.
Right? You know, so that's the point. Even though it's considered great, you know, you want a break from great.
You explained one time the trip from New York to LA with the two signs.
When you get out there, huge, like as big as this, you know, this wall, billboards, you know, advertise. As soon as you come out, you know, into that concourse thing, then it's like, oh, you know, New York, it's all L.A. ones. And as soon as you land in L.A., it's all New York ones. I thought that was funny because I came back, I went from New York to L.A., and then when I came back, you know, in both of them, it's the same. You know, I thought, wow, that's wild. But nobody mentioned Chicago. Yeah. You want to lose your hat? Go to Chicago. Yeah.
Exciting.
Seeing the misery of the conditioned souls, the Supreme Lord mercifully introduces Vidhi Marg, firmly establishing that the association with sadhus is imperative. Right? In other words, you've established Vaidhi, but this association of sadhus is imperative. Sadhana is not going to work. Vaidhi is not going to work without association. Even Bhava Bhakti without association does not work. Right? Like that. You have to get the association of the eternal associates of the Lord to gain their mood. In other words, you have to become their assistants, follow in their footsteps. Otherwise, how do we know what's love? Right? By the association of sadhus, the jivas will be able to understand that they are servants of Krishna and thus strive to attain their real nature. So when you understand that, then you'll strive for it. Otherwise, you're not going to strive. You think, I am this body, I am these situations that are there, the modes of nature. So therefore, as that manifests, is what should be, you know, dealt with.
We could understand that in a certain, in the mood is what we wouldn't be able to
do. Yes. You can understand your servant, but how to serve. Because so many people have ideas how to serve God in a speculative way, and they do funny things. Stand up naked on roofs and flap their arms. You know, stuff like that. You know, but it doesn't exactly, you know. I mean, it did get a sainthood, but, you know, hey, it didn't... The scriptures offer various instructions to the living entities in accordance with their different mentalities, which are defined as adhikar, qualification, right? So that's what's adhikar, is what it is works for you according to your condition. You have a conditioning, then there are things you can do well. That's why there's limitation. Grihastha do that, brahmacharis do this, this one does this one does that. And if there's any seemingly overlap, that's only if it's connected to Krishna. You understand? Means the brahmachari doesn't deal with money, but if it's connected to Krishna, he can deal with money, right? But when you find the brahmachari is dealing with money and putting it in his own pocket, that doesn't work, right? But the grihastha is dealing with money and putting it in his pocket, that works. You understand? But if it's service to Krishna and he's putting it in his pocket, that also doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's not that, well, the brahmachari is, you know, selling things, so therefore he could also sell things for himself. That doesn't work. He can only sell things for Krishna. Because otherwise, if he's going to do for himself, then he has to be a grihastha to do that. But the grihastha could sell things for himself or sell things for Krishna. You understand? So it's adhikar. It's what actually works. So many times we'll say, no, but why can't we do this and that? We're only asking to do things that we see advantage. But the things, other things that go along with it, the obligations, that we don't necessarily want to do.
Right. Sometimes the situation is not ideal and we kind of have to do some things that may be outside the purview of what...
What does that mean, outside?
I'm personally paying for this myself.
Yeah, but the point is why are you paying for it? Right, so therefore it works like that.
But I'm the one deciding how much I can, I mean...
No, but the point is you have to decide it, and so you're responsible to see that it's decided that it's done for Krishna, because otherwise someone above you, or the temple commander would decide, or the temple president would decide, or you know, whatever department you'd be working with would decide, but somebody's deciding. So it just happens to be you have to decide. You know, you have to get it together, you have to decide it, you have to implement it, you have to do the whole thing, right? But the point is as long as it's like that, then it still works. But as soon as you introduce grihastha elements of, you know, that it's yours and now it's like this, then that's where it falls apart. Does that make sense?
So the weakness of doing something outside, yeah, you're adding that. Like you can introduce elements which don't belong to it.
Yes, means you either won't do them nicely, or even if you by skill can do the activity nicely, you won't have the right mentality. You know what I'm saying? It's just like there's the thing, oh yeah, well I can do that also. So you can go and do it expertly, but you won't do it with the right mentality, just like the person here. He can sing, so he can say, well they're singing, I can sing, but he won't have the right mentality. So it's more important than the skill is the attitude of the skill. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, let's say you have the street sweeper. If he has the right attitude, he's a good street sweeper, even if his skill isn't so good. Right? So if his skill's not so good, but he has the right attitude, then who organizes the street sweepers will put him in an area that, okay, it doesn't have to be so perfect. Because he appreciates he's got the right attitude. But if someone's proud, has the wrong attitude, then you don't want to even put him in the good place. You put him also in the bad place. You know what I'm saying? Because attitude is always considered more important than the skill. So that's the thing, is that because of the attitude, the skill is given. So if we think, no, I can take the skill, I can do the skill, yes, but you don't have the attitude that goes with it. You know what I'm saying? Like the Brahmin is teaching, but the Vaishya, I can do that. He could. But he'll make money off of it. So turn it into a business. But that's proper skill, wrong attitude. Does that make sense? You know, and sometimes they're really good at it. You know, they have all the top people, they have all the top latest stuff, you know, really put in some good serious money. But the difficulty is it's only to make money. So their skill at turning out someone with the knowledge is just so that they'll make money. The better the result, the more money they can charge. But the person who comes out doesn't necessarily have an attitude that you'd want them to have. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's... These various states of qualification are grouped into three categories: karma adhikar, jnana adhikar, and prema adhikar. These categories are also specified in the Vedas, wherein corresponding rules and regulations are specified. People who do not follow any of these three types of regulations are ostracized from the Vedas and condemned as malechas. You know? Not that the malechas care, but, you know.
No.
Right? In other words, material is karma and jnana, transcendental is prema. So that's how you get these three and not some other group. The duties of the three adhikara groups described in the Vedas have been elaborated upon by the wise sages and handed down to us as the Smriti Shastras. Right? In other words, the Veda is describing it, the sages studying the Veda in their wisdom, then they give it, they hand it down, they teach others. What they teach is called Smriti. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the difference between Shruti and Smriti. Shruti is the Veda itself, which has all the knowledge. Smriti is how the sages studying the Veda passed it on and practiced it. Right?
Yes. So that's application.
Yes, that's applied. So therefore, everything else other than the Veda, that is Smriti. So your Ayurveda, you see, that's why they're all conversations.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just the four books. Shruti.
Shruti is, yeah, but it includes the Upanishads,
okay.
Like that, you can say like that, because they'll explain like that. And yeah. Sometimes the Brahma, the Brahmanas, then they'll have the Brahma, how you say, the Griha Sutras and the Dharma Sutras, but that's kind of where it ends. Some will accept Ayurveda like this as expansions because they're Upaveda.
Mm.
So in that way they get in things, but they don't accept the Puranas, they don't accept the, how you say, Vedanta Sutra, they won't accept the, you know, Dharma Shastras, they'll get their Dharma. In other words, you can get everything from the Veda, because that's how the original sages did it. But the point is, the original sages, having gained that to make it more accessible and more understandable, have given it in the form of the Smriti. Right? Because that's the whole point. The great sages can appreciate the Veda and get everything from it. Everybody else requires the Smriti.
What, Maharaj, what makes Isha Upanishad Shruti?
Why is this Upanishad Shruti? It's an Upanishad. Upanishads are always Shruti. But of the Upanishads, it's special in that it's the only Upanishad that it is actually within the Samhita section of the Vedas. It's the, I think that I don't know, it's the last chapter of the Rig. Yajur. Okay, it's the last chapter. Like that. So, because all the others, they're in the Upanishadic section, which is different from the Samhita section. Right? In other words, the Samhita is the verses. The Brahmanas show how to use the verses in the ritual. Right? Aranyakas tell what is the metaphysical reasons and behind the rituals and the mantras. And the Upanishads tell the philosophical understanding of the mantras. Does that make sense? So that's considered the Veda. The conclusion of all these Smriti Shastras is presented in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. If karma does not aim at the attainment of jnana, and if jnana does not cultivate in bhakti, both karma and jnana must be discarded on the grounds of having become atheistic heretical practices. Right? So heretical basically means it's not actually in line with what's supposed to be done. You're doing something you shouldn't be doing. Atheistic means you're not accepting it's connected with the Lord. Right? So you could be accepting the Lord, right? But you're not doing it to please the Lord. You understand? So the point is here you're accepting that it is connected to the Lord and it's being done to please the Lord. Does that make sense? So in this case means your general definition of an heretic is somebody who's not following the rules. He just does whatever he likes, right? Makes up his own process. That's a heretic. But technically a heretic is someone who's following rules but not actually following the rules for the purpose they're meant for. Does that make sense?
The consciousness as well.
Yeah, so let's say the person is cooking nicely according to the rules, exactly. But then after cooking, he takes it and throws it on the wall, right? And he wasn't just checking if the spaghetti was done, right? Okay? So, you know that one? So the spaghetti's cooked, if you throw it on the wall, it'll stick.
Yeah. That's
problem is that you got to clean it off the wall. But
I don't think they do that in Italy. Is that American?
No, I've seen Italians do it.
Oh.
I learned it from an Italian.
Okay.
Like that, yeah. It works.
Yeah.
Like that.
I have to try it.
Yeah, yeah. Then you have to clean the wall. No, don't throw the whole thing, just one.
Okay. So don't eat it off the
wall. No, that you could do also, like that. But then probably
so then
you put
clean the
sauce.
Wall first.
Yeah, clean the wall first, throw the spaghetti. Then, but the problem is then you have to also use the sauce like Italians use, just to give some flavor.
Yeah.
The pasta's the main flavor they want, not the American where it's all sauce. Yes. And the pasta's just there to, so you can pick it up, right, yeah.
I'll think about it.
Okay. Okay, does that make sense? So the heretic means, in this case, is that he is not seeing a connection to the Lord, therefore technically his application of it isn't doing the purpose that it's supposed to.
Mm.
Right? Because you do an activity to get a certain result. If that result's not obtained, then actually it's heretic. Mm. So you may get the external form of it, but that external form is for offering to the Lord. So if you don't accept the Lord and you don't offer it to the Lord, then how is it actually proper?
Mm.
Right? In other words, you have the result, but then the next stage is offered to the Lord. So that means then it can't be heretical. And you can't be an atheist, because how you offer to the Lord if he doesn't exist? Is that what I'm saying? In reality, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga form a single yoga system. This is the Vedic Vaishnava Siddhanta, right? You have the three aspects, but they're actually one system. Right. Like going to the market, you know, preparing the kitchen, preparing the vegetables, cooking, serving, eating, it's all one thing. Right? You know, we don't say cooking and nobody ever eats, or cooking and no one ever prepares. So it's one thing. But you can say this is the preparation part, this is the cooking part, this is the eating part. Yes.
What would be the reason that sometimes
because karma without, if it's not yoga, then it's a problem. So karma yoga, right? Does that make sense? But you can get where karma yoga means that they're following karma yoga or jnana yoga as naishkarmya. In other words, they're following the ritual of karma as naishkarmya. Means they're doing the activity without desire for the result, or jnana without desire for the result, or even the rituals of bhakti without desire for a result for themselves. You understand? So you could do that, right? Mayavadis do that. But the difficulty is the Lord's not included in that, right? In other words, I have a deity, I'm offering artik and all that, but I don't believe the deity is the Lord. It's just the ritual of bhakti, the ritual of jnana, the ritual of karma, right? Then that is improper. So that's why sometimes even there jnana yoga will refer to, or karma yoga will refer to their idea of liberating themselves and all that. But artha, when I say jnana yoga, means jnana has been connected to the Lord. So in other words, these areas, because they're main, they're used by so many in so many ways that many times the definitions of, or the words themselves seem to overlap. Right? But the context is actually different. If the jiva is not shown that these three are but different steps on the one staircase, he cannot ascend to the temple of bhakti. Right? So here's where the yoga ladder comes from that Prabhupada talks about. Right? In other words, it's a staircase. You start on karma, because that's where your mentality is. I'm attached to material nature. So I engage that attachment to material nature in the Lord's service. With time, I become detached. I become attached to detachment. So I engage the detachment in Krishna's service. Right? But then eventually I come to the point where I'm just engaged in things to please Krishna, the bhakti. Does that make sense? But if you look at it, once you come to the platform of bhakti, it means that was the staircase to get to the platform of bhakti. But you're doing that for the, in pursuance of bhakti karma, in pursuance of the jnana, in pursuance of bhakti. But then there comes a point where the bhakti is the main thing that you notice, right? Now, in performing the activities of bhakti, it's not that you're not using activity and knowledge. So that's why it's one system. One is you follow it in that line, you'll get the bhakti, and when you're performing bhakti, you use the other two anyway. Does that make sense? Right? In other words, you have to have form and knowledge and the right mood. So the form is karma, the knowledge is jnana, and the mood is bhakti. So anything you do, all those three. Chit shakti means knowledge and activity. Right? But prajumna means you have the right attitude. Right? The right spirit. Right? So the spirit of Gita is that subservience to God. Then with knowledge about God and the jiva, and then endeavoring to use the skill, then that becomes complete. But you have to be able to know what's skill, what's knowledge, and what's devotion. Somebody says, that's why you study in the Gita karma, jnana, and jnana in bhakti as three separate things. Then you put them together. Does that make sense? So jnana is technically part of karma. Right? Because karma means you're engaging the senses. But what engages the senses?
The mind.
So either you're dealing with the mind aspect of karma or the senses part of karma. So generally most people look at the senses part and define that as karma. But actually, karma and jnana are both sides of the one thing. That's why we can say karma and jnana. And occasionally we'll say karma, jnana, and yoga. Right? Just to distinguish.
Intelligence is controlling the senses?
Intelligence mechanically controls the senses, but why the intelligence controlling the senses in that way is by the mind. The mind decides. Any endeavor carried out to sustain life is karma. Right? So that then defines that. This endeavor is of three types. Karma, auspicious, vikarma, inauspicious, and akarma, abstinence from auspicious work. So footnote 9. In the Bhagavad Gita 4.17.18 it is stated, the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. One who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent among men. And he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, one is serious about liberation from material bondage. One has to understand the distinctions between action, inaction, and unauthorized actions. One has to apply oneself to such an analysis of action, reaction, and perverted reactions, because it is very difficult subject matter. Right? Difficult, because this is where all the confusion comes in. Right? Because this is where overlaps and all these things happen. You have to be able to see two things at once. Right? As we were discussing before, the jiva, he is the embodiment of achinta beta beta tattva, because he's simultaneously one and different. Right? So therefore it becomes important that the jiva understands this. But the problem is in the conditioned state, it's the jiva that has the problem understanding it. Right? Material energy doesn't have any problem, right? It's not like that. And the spirit, internal potency doesn't have any problem. So it's us that has the problem. Right? That's why it's self-realization. Understanding who the self is, but also understanding that achinta beta beta tattva. It's all part of the same thing. That makes sense. To understand Krishna consciousness and action according to its modes, one has to learn one's relationship with the Supreme. In other words, one who has learned perfectly knows that every living entity is an eternal servitor of the Lord, and that consequently one has to act in Krishna consciousness. The entire Bhagavad Gita is directed towards this conclusion, right? That everything is engaged in the Lord's service. Any other conclusions against this consciousness and its attendant actions are vikarmas, or prohibited actions, right? In other words, the karma is those actions that would be used to do this, but without the consciousness, they're just karma, right? Does that make sense? So that's reactions, right? But doing it in connection to Krishna, that is inaction. That's without reactions. And not following the recommended procedure, that's the perverted, right, or the unauthorized. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secret from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be bewildered, right? Therefore, 700 translations on Gita, and only this one is getting the effect. Of these three, only auspicious work is good. The auspicious work is of three kinds: nitya, daily, and constant obligatory duties; naimittic, circumstantial duties; and kamyaka, or kamya, ceremonies performed out of a desire for a personal benefit. Since kamya karma is selfish, only nitya and naimittic karma really fit the descriptions of karma. Right, because karma is supposed to be uplifting. You're only doing it for yourself. Therefore, it's kamika. Nitya dharma is defined as activities beneficial for body, mind, community, and afterlife. It is everyone's duty to execute nitya karma. Daily rites such as Sandhya Bandana, offering prayers, using righteous means to protect one's body, family, and society, and following the path of truthfulness are all considered as nitya karma. Naimittic karma is karma that one must carry out under certain circumstances. For example, performing rites for the departed soul of one's father or mother, atoning for sins, and so on. Does that make sense? In other words, within the means, we're taking the overall naimittic means. You have the nitya meaning the spiritual activities of the living entity, and naimittic meaning any conditioned activities, right? But within naimittic, then we're taking and breaking down to which ones you always do, so that's called nitya, which ones are occasionally done, right? That's naimittic, and things that you're doing for yourself, kamya. Yeah. So that's not considered technically karma, though it uses the rituals generally the naimittic, but you're doing it for yourself. That's why it's called kamya. Right? Otherwise, it would be called naimittika. Right? Does that make sense? So we understand that there's an overlap here of definitions. Because right? The one word so nicely explains it, but it can be applied in all these ways. Does that make sense? I think we'll probably end with that, because the next is a big point, and we won't get through it in 1 minute.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur.